Hi, I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Kayla, and welcome to the Witch Story Podcast, where we talk about new witch trials every week, as well as other tales and content related to witches that we have researched for you. As always, we would just like to bring light to the real history of witch persecutions that were quite gruesome and horrific, with some unfortunately still taking place today. So let's begin with our third episode. I can't believe we're on our third episode, but this is going to be on one of the largest witch trials in Hungary in a city called Szeged.
Are you ready?
Yes, let's do this.
What should we call this one? The Szeged Trials? The Witch Island of Hungary?
I like that one. That sounds better.
I like it too. So everyone, welcome to our episode on the Witch Island of Hungary. Once again, I will have some minor struggles with pronouncing some of the names and cities, but I'll try my best. The Hungarian language, well, Majornev, as they call it, is actually so interesting though, because it's not like any surrounding language, because it's a Uralic language. And so you know how there's Germanic languages and you have your Indo-European languages? Well, Hungarian is not closely related to any of those. It's actually more similar to Finnish and Estonian. And some countries have minor dialects that they use, like Russia has a Uralic dialect in some of the villages. So anyways, what they speak is very different than what we know or anywhere else in the world. But Szeged, the city where our trial takes place, is also very old and rich in history. And it has been occupied since the Neolithic era. So obviously it's worth living in if people have been coming to settle there for hundreds of years. And it's currently the third largest city in Hungary and can be found on the southern border near Serbia. And the city boasts itself as the home of paprika, the home of beautiful architecture, an amazing university, and of course, its famous fish soup. Let me try to get this.
Halashla. I feel like I nailed that pronunciation.
I think so too. But don't quote me because I'm not Hungarian.
It's probably going to be like galazle or something.
Yeah, something very different than what we think.
Mm-hmm. Apparently, when I was looking up sources on this city, they're like, you got to try the fish soup. And I don't know. It's not appetizing to me, but I might just be a ignorant Canadian girl.
Yeah. Well, I think the combination of the word fish and soup doesn't sound very appetizing.
It's a very Scandinavian thing.
Yes, but when I think about clam chowder, that's technically a fish soup, right? That's a fish soup.
That's a fish soup.
To be honest, but like I think fish soup is probably more to do with like they definitely created a broth with the fish and then added fish parts to the soup, and maybe it's not creamy like the chowder is. Like it's not a chowder, basically.
Yeah. Well, we eat a lot of fish stuff in Poland, and it's actually quite nice, but every time I've recommended it or like gave it to somebody to try, they're like, ugh. Because we use a little vinegar and onions too, and the whole thing just smells bad, looks bad. But when you eat it, it's nice.
I'm sure it's probably very good because when I ate fish, like when I wasn't veg, I just like seafood was my favorite meat to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Hands down.
A lot of vegetarians.
Yeah, like hands down. And honestly, because I love soup so much, I would definitely, like I would have eaten a lot of that fish soup for sure.
Well, one thing we'll remember about this episode is that if we ever go to Szeged, we should try their fish soup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds good to me.
Unfortunately, Szeged was not always a pleasant place to live in. In year 1700, the city had a population of less than 2,000 people. Most of them were of Hungarian ethnicity, but they were heavily influenced by the Turkish occupation that began in year 1686. And when the Turks were driven out of that region by the Habsburgs, life became very hard for the residents of Szeged. An influx of Serbians, Croatians, and Germans began immigrating into the city, bringing the population up to 14,000 in only 25 years.
If I can do the math correctly, what is that, like 7 times?
Yes. Times. Yeah, because if it was 2,000, then yeah.
Yeah. That's a lot.
It is a lot. Yeah, wow.
Yeah. And sadly, most of these settlers became beggars on the streets. Like, I'm guessing if you put, 12,000 people in the city in less than 25 years, like, you can't create that much homes and jobs.
No. Well, they don't have the means to build it that fast like we do now. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't make
any Even sense. If you do that to a small town today, I doubt they could properly provide jobs unless they build, like, a huge factory or something.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, so a lot of beggars, and the city was filled with hunger and plagues. In 1712, there was a massive flood followed by a severe drought that lasted several years. Mm-hmm. Riots and political turmoil were a response to the famines. And in 1728, the droughts were followed by a hailstorm, and the townspeople went straight to the church to get help. Keep in mind back then, like, everything was the church. Like, you don't go to your mayor, you just go to God.
Yeah. Well, I guess this wouldn't be considered the Dark Ages, but, like, when you have a small town that is riddled with plague, disease, flooding, things like that, people will turn to God because they feel like they have nobody else to turn to. Mm-hmm. So,
honestly, this was the majority of Europe for the past 100 years around this
exactly.
time.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And Szeged was a predominantly Catholic city at this point. The residents just did not understand why God would punish them like this. So in response to the anger, the priests assured the city folks that this was not an act of God. And they persuaded the citizens into thinking that there were witches living among them, cohorting with the devil to bring these terrible dreads upon them.
Or in their terms, this would be population control, in my mind. I mean, if you have an overpopulated town riddled with disease because it is overpopulated with very small space, the thing you would try to do was lessen the population by accusing people of witchcraft.
Yeah, everybody accusing everybody, honestly.
Food for thought.
Witches and sorcerers were not a new idea in Hungary by any means. The idea of witches, along with vampires and other folk tales and figures, had been prevalent in Hungarian society for hundreds of years by then. Keep in mind that, you know, this is a location very close to Transylvania, where it's the home of vampires and Dracula. So when told that the droughts were a result of witches, everyone instantly began pointing fingers in fear that somebody else might accuse them first. And one of the first people to be accused was a woman named Anna Nagy Kokenin. Her last name spelled K-O-K-E-N-Y-N-E. And she was a midwife known for her bad temper and anger issues. She was easily disliked, especially when infants died under her service. Which was a lot, mm-hmm. not with Anna, with infants dying. With
everybody.
everybody dying, actually.
With women who could have children.
Anna was actually accused a few years earlier of being a witch in 1726 by a man named István Fodor. Actually, the only Hungarian person I know is named István. It's interesting.
Huh.
Yeah, okay, so what happened was István's brother's wife, so István's sister-in-law, she died during a childbirth that Anna was the midwife for. And Anna was said to have delivered the child out in many pieces, which as a result led to the death of the mother. But honestly, looking back, it could have been the other way around. The mother could have had some complications that led to the death or the child coming out in quote-unquote pieces. But of course, it was the midwife, Anna, who was found guilty. And they tried to use the swimming test on her to determine if she was a witch in the river Maros. This is the classic test where if the woman floats, she's a witch and should die. But if she sinks, she's dead. But hurrah, at least she's not a witch. Anna did survive, but instead of being burned as punishment, she was exiled instead. This was kind of clever of the city to do because in the future, they now had a scapegoat to blame, and that's exactly what they did. Anna was blamed for all the famine, sickness, and low mortality rates. And she was also accused of practicing these enchantments and spells and sorcery with other older women who were possibly other witches. And when she was tortured into a confession, she did not hesitate to bring others down with her. Let's take a break there, though, for our sponsor message before we get into more of the crazy accusations that happened after this.
Today's episode is once again sponsored by RealCom. RealCom is a community-based app for identifying triggers in movies. The user can either search a movie title to make sure that the film they are about to watch does not contain any triggers, or at the same time, you can add triggers so others will know not to watch and be reminded of past traumas. The best part is, it's absolutely free to download in the Apple Store. Just type in RealCom, RealCalm, to download today.
All right, thank you, RealCom. So before we left off, we have our accused witch, Anna, who just confessed, but she was a feisty, angry one. So she pointed fingers at others, too. Anna accused 82-year-old Daniel Rocha, the former chief judge of Shagged. And Daniel was also the richest man in town at the time. So this was an easy target to point your finger at, as a lot of people must have been jealous of this incredibly wealthy man. And he was accused and said to have been the leader of a coven of witches in Shagged. Under torture, he immediately confessed and admitted that himself and his companions, including his wife, were responsible for the droughts. And get this. Okay, so he said that he did this by putting the rain from the drought. He put the rain in buckets and hid them under all these barrels on his property. And these bags of rain were then taken and sold to Turkey, and that was the reason for all his wealth.
Oh goodness.
Like, what a Turkey story
into this. Yeah. Like, he brings Turkey into this. Like, what? Oh man, this is a mess.
Mm-hmm. He admitted to doing this for 7 years as a part of a contract that he signed with the devil. And interestingly, the structure of his coven was to it resembled the style of a military. The city's prisons were so full with all these accusations that were made after this, and they just like all fit perfectly into his coven. So in this military of his, Daniel was the captain? Is that the top?
Yeah, I guess captains were the top of like their specific what do you call it? Legion?
Yeah.
Section? Sure.
He was just the head honcho of his coven.
Yes.
And then he had other witches that took the place of lieutenants. He even had a flag holder, a drummer, a trumpeter, amongst other positions. And as evidence of this, he said that one of the witches kept their flag in a nutshell. So that was a flag holder. I don't know how flag can fit in a nutshell, but that's witchcraft for you. And the trumpet that was used was carved from a donkey bone. And the drum was a horse's hoof, and it was beat with the leg of a donkey.
Wow.
If you hit a horse hoof against a donkey leg, you're not going to get a drum sound.
No, that's more not a clanging sound, but like, I don't know. Ooh, yeah.
Thud.
Or like a clacking, like a sound. I don't know.
But yes, this was his coven, and this was the stuff that he used, a horse hoof, donkey leg.
Right. I would have loved to know if they actually found these things. Like, did they actually find the proof that he had these things?
Do they Probably ever?
Not. No, usually not.
I would love, as an archaeologist, to like find a horse hoof and a donkey leg together and just be like, this was a drum.
This was meant to be a drum in the witchcraft practices of this man's coming in this time. Good Lord.
Yeah, and all of the members of this army of witches were thought to have possessed satanic connections to serve the pagan Turks.
So this is now Turkey's fault as well.
Yes. Anything that has to do with Turkey from back then and even in modern times is usually portrayed as not very nice, because Turkey was a country of pure conquest, and they enslaved people and did really, well, what we know to be bad things. But obviously in the Turkish perspective, it's known to be quite different. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
I know Turkish people love Turkey.
Yes, they do. I just worked with one. She always talked about how much she loved her country and she wants to move back there. But
I mean, it's a beautiful country.
Yeah, for sure. I've always wanted to go. I've always wanted to go to Istanbul, or as I like to call it, Constantinople, even though it hasn't been called that in over.
So medieval of you. Yeah.
But I've always wanted to see the Hagia Sophia.
Yeah. All right, so let's get back into the trial. Now, we were just finishing up where we had that entire militaristic style coven. And all of these individuals that were accused were then tried with the proper procedures based on Annex III. We're going to get a little bit technical on you for a second. These were the code of 1656 issued by Ferdinand for Lower Austria and the Criminal Instructio of 1702. Under Article 60 of the Praxis Criminalis de Magia, so for magic, there was a list of how to properly examine and treat criminals of witches. You couldn't just say somebody's a witch and then do whatever you want to hurt or kill them. There was like a proper way to get rid of a witch, even though it was pretty brutal. So they had a list of how to interrogate them. And once thoroughly questioned, although most likely a very agonizing questioning, they were then tested by being poked and prodded with this huge needle on suspicious moles that were thought to have been devil's marks. And if you didn't have a mole visible on your skin with your clothes off, they would strip you down naked. They would go into your hairline to find these moles. And if you did not bleed when you're poked with the mole, this was evidence of being a witch. And then they were taken again for further examination and testing to the nearest river to be water dunked. And when they did this to the individuals at Szeged, three women immediately drowned. I mean, who wouldn't? You're literally tied to a chair. But they were not accused of witchcraft, although...
But they still died.
Yeah.
After all the poking, prodding, examining, interrogating, and drowning, it is estimated that 13 individuals remained that were guilty of being a witch. And they were to be burned on an island in the middle of the Tisza River. On July 23rd, 1728, three stakes were put up on the island now called Boşerkene Şeget, a word of Turkish origin meaning island of witches. And a crowd would have gathered with the satisfaction that the people who caused all the droughts and suffering were now being punished. 12 of the accused witches were burned. At the same time, all being tied together at the stakes in groups of four, 6 men and 6 women total.
Which I think very symbolic, I must say.
I think the last episode, we were just like, I think I said something about sometimes they didn't have enough stakes.
Yeah.
So this is 12 people on 3 stakes.
3. Jesus.
Mm-hmm. And when they were put on the stakes, they were most likely required to wear a horn skull cap painted with angels before being burnt.
Oh, I'm sorry. And that's not considered as witchcraft?
I know. They weird.
A horn skull cap and were then burned?
Yeah. I think this was something for Justice Region, because I've never come across this in any other trials. And this was a cone-shaped pointed hat that was called a Jewish hat, not to be confused with a kippah. I know those are two completely separate things, and I'm not trying to...
No, it's okay. I got you.
Okay.
I think the reason why like a Jew would be portrayed, like cone hats usually represents the person as dumb. or stupid?
No, actually, really? I was looking, well, that might have been a thing. I think that might have been a thing a little later, but contemporary to this, I found a lot of research that they just wore this as like this, just what Jewish people wore. It was the style back then. It had no negative connotations. I wasn't trying to say that.
No. Yeah.
Okay.
That's interesting. I actually want to know what this hat is called. Like, it must have an actual name other than just being called a Jewish hat. I'm so curious now.
Yeah. Well, some sources say horn skull cap, but a lot of sources actually said like a Jewish hat because it was just what Jewish people wore.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'll send you pictures later.
Yes. Cool. Yeah.
So as I mentioned, 13 people were initially accused, but I said 12 people were burned. This is because one woman, Sarah Conch, was pregnant at the time of the trial, and she was executed after the birth of her child. Yeah. And this was not Hungary's first trial, but following that day, hundreds of more victims were burned in Hungary until 1777. And in 1777, Empress Maria Theresa of Austria, and also the Queen of Hungary, she ordered that all cases of witches must be confirmed by the High Court, which ended most trials because I guess people didn't want to go through that effort. And they're probably like, these people weren't even witches in the first place. So that ended a lot of cases.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
I'm glad for that. My goodness.
Yeah. Go Empress Maria.
Yeah. Why are like queen rulers always the best ones? Like, it's always like a golden age when they rule, honestly.
And yet we haven't learned from history.
Nope. Not a thing. Yeah.
Today, the island of Bosor Kenesheget has become a peninsula after a huge flooding that the city had in year 1879. But it's a really nice place to visit, apparently. There's a bunch of protected species, 78 to be exact, on the peninsula, and it's open for visitors to come and go. And the peninsula is also supposedly haunted. And for those brave souls who wish to spend the night with the witches of the past, you're actually able to set up a tent and camp out.
To be honest, I would love to do that. I don't know. I feel like there must be some connection there, maybe.
Yeah, when I was just looking up just about the city, I think there was a YouTube video of some people. Mm-hmm. They're like, we're going to set up tent because this place is haunted and we're going to see what happens. I didn't watch that video, but I don't know. You can tell it's haunted.
I wouldn't be there to like see what happens. I'd be there because I actually want to talk to them. I don't know. I feel like it would be an interesting opportunity. Also, I did look up the Jewish hats while we were talking. Mm-hmm. And so it was a cone-shaped pointed hat, often white or yellow, worn by Jews in medieval Europe and some of the Islamic world. Initially worn by choice, its wearing was enforced in some places in Europe after the 1215 Fourth Council of the Lateran for adult male Jews to wear while outside of the ghetto to distinguish themselves from others. So it was traditionally worn, but then it was enforced on top of that so that they could be distinguished. And I feel like there must be some connection with like the modern, like perhaps dunce hat with the Jewish hat from back then. I don't know. I feel like I knew I could make a connection somewhere with that.
Yeah. This one source tried making a connection by saying that cone hat is what led witch hats to be shaped today. But if you actually look at a lot of hats that people wore in the medieval period and after and before, like a lot of hats were fancy and conical. So I don't think it had anything to do with the modern depiction
dunce of a witch or
a dunce cap.
Yeah.
These conical hats also just remind me of a theme, basically, of the taller or bigger something is, the wealthier or the more status you had. So women who wore these conical hats as well, the taller they were, then the more status they had. I think it could also be somewhat symbolic of being closer to God, but I'm pretty sure it was more to do with how much money you had.
Yeah, that's odd that a lot of people think that's where witch hats came from, because I think by what you're saying, it's the complete opposite. Like, witches would not want to be close to God if they were a witch.
Exactly. The modern witch hat, I think, was built from some wicked story that made women sound awful. And because they were pointy and looked odd, then why not put it on a witch? I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel like that kind of makes sense.
Definitely do an episode of like the etymology and the origins of these absurd depictions.
I think that's a great idea. I would love to talk about that and dive a little deeper into it for sure. And on that happy note.
Thank you for listening. Thank Toodaloo. You for listening.
Yeah.
For an additional source on today's podcast, be sure to check out the book Witchcraft and Demonology in Hungary and Transylvania, edited by Gabor Klanache and Eva Pox. And also the book The Witch Hunt in Early Modern Europe was a good overall read, and it does mention Szeged's trial as well. Thanks everyone for listening once again. If you would like to send us a message, feel free to email us at witchstorypodcast@gmail.com and also follow us on social media at witchstorypod. Please don't forget to rate and subscribe us and tune back in again next week for another episode. Bye everyone!